Okay, good morning. We continue the last week's topic. I'm sorry, it hasn't come up on the website yet. So, loving your fellow as yourself, ahav lerecha kamocha, and v'halachta bidrachav, and walking in Hashem's ways. So we gave a number of hashkafic explanations to this. Rav Dessler had three levels of loving other people, and we went through all that. There's now one other point we want to get to, point number C. It's nice and big. The idea of unconditional love. Now, that needs a little bit of explanation over here. When we're loving other Jews and emulating Hashem's ways. So let me just preface with a famous Gemara. The Gemara says that the Torah begins with acts. Oh, I have it written down there. Point number two. The Torah begins with acts of kindness and ends with acts of kindness. The beginning of acts of kindness is that we find that Hashem clothed Adam and Chava. That was an act of kindness. They didn't have any clothes, and he gave them clothes. It ends with act of kindnesses, with Hashem's burying of Moshe. So, you see that the Torah is completely kindness. So, the rabbis ask a question. The Torah begins with kindness. So, is the clothing of Adam and Chava the first act of kindness in the Torah?
Hashem created the world.
The world was created with kindness. There was kindness. Hashem put Adam in Gan Eden. Wouldn't you say that? Wouldn't say that's a kindness? Here, have the whole planet Earth, I'm going to put you in the Garden of Eden. So that would really be an amazing kindness. So why does it say the Torah does start with kindness? Why are they picking this example when it's not the first one? There's another idea. When we talk about an act of kindness, in Hebrew it's called gemilut or gemilas chasodim, which that itself, if you think about the Hebrew, is an oxymoron. Why is it an oxymoron? Because the word gomel or gemilut implies paying back. Paying back. Chesed implies that you're doing something gratuitously for someone. So how can we say the concept of gemilas chasodim, you're paying back someone something that is really gratuitous to people? You understand the problem in the Hebrew words? See, when you look at the English, everything seems fine, you know, but in the Hebrew, it just doesn't really fit. So the answer to the question is that when is the Torah, and the Gemara says the Torah starts, doesn't say the Torah begins with chesed, even though I wrote it that way, the real Gemara, it begins with gemilus chesedim. The Torah begins with gemilus chesedim and ends with gemilus chesedim. So I guess there's a difference between chesed and gemilus chesedim. And the difference is as follows. We are often inclined to do kindness when we think the recipient deserves kindness. Okay? That could be chesed in general. Gemilus chasodim is doing kindness to someone even though we may personally feel that the person does not deserve the kindness. So let's take a look at Hashem. Hashem creates the world. It truly is chesed. He creates a world that's chesed. He puts Adam into the Garden of Eden. It's considered kindness. But Hashem said, okay, I'm putting you in the Garden of Eden, and I'm telling you, you can do whatever you want there. You could have any fruit you want. You can have everything you want. There's only one thing you can't have. All right? So you have like 99.9% of everything that's there. There's one thing I don't want you to have. So comes along Adam and Chava, and they eat the one thing Hashem tells them not to have. And because of that, they create a massive problem for themselves. I'm not going to get into a whole lengthy Parsha class on this, although I'd love to, but now's not the time. And because of the thing that they did, now they created a whole new set of problems, Now they realize they're unclothed and are ashamed of being unclothed. Had they listened to Hashem's instructions, they would not have been ashamed to be unclothed. And now he has to deal with their problems that they created themselves by not listening to Hashem. So Hashem could have very justly said, you know what, that's your problem, it's not my problem. I put you in the Garden of Eden. I gave you the right instructions. I told you what to do. All you had to do was listen. Not like I gave you a really hard job to do. I only told you just one little thing you shouldn't do. And what happened? You went into that thing. So now you deal with it. I did enough kindness for you. So now what did I get for what I did? You paid me. You did bad to me. So now, what Hashem teaches us is to be gomel chesed, to pay back. But instead of paying back with a punishment, you pay back with a kindness. And that's gemilus chasodim. Do you understand? The Torah starts with gemilus chasodim, that even when the person does what they shouldn't have done and should really not be the beneficiary of the kindness, Hashem still does the kindness. Hashem does good to you, even though he should be paying you back with bad, but he pays you back with good, even if you've done the bad. Now, this does not suggest that when, you know, you have children and they don't listen to you, you should always be rewarding them. We don't want to reward negative punishment, but we also don't withhold kindness because of negative behavior. And that is why, for example, when we bench Goymel, okay, when we bench Goymel, if a person is in a very serious accident, that their life could have died and they lived, we make a blessing. It's interesting, the ending of the blessing is a very interesting text. We say, bless you, God, King Umus, ha-gomel, that you repay, lechayovim, to the people who are guilty, Tovos, goodness, Shigamalani, that you have given back to me, Kol Tov, only good. Which, what's the blessing saying? God, you're the God who, even though people are guilty, you'll do good to them. And me, you know, I must have been a little bit guilty because I shouldn't have gotten into an accident, but you were still kind to me that you saved my life. So that bracha itself indicates this point. And that's the same thing, really. At the end of the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu. Would Moshe Rabbeinu really needed to be buried by Hashem? Why did he need to be buried by Hashem? Because he didn't merit to go into Eretz Yisrael. So really, if you look carefully at the end of the Torah, when they bury Moshe, it's kind of unusual that, you know, we're talking about Moshe, he was an Eved Hashem, this and that. And yet it says, and right at the end, we rehash, and yeah, he died because he sinned by hitting the rock that he shouldn't have done. He didn't sanctify God. Man, you're talking to the guy's dying. You have to bring up the old stuff already? The answer is yes, to emphasize the fact that Hashem buried him, even though Moshe on his level, not us, but Moshe on his level, really didn't deserve to be buried by God, because he was the one, he shouldn't have died. He should have been able to go in there and say, so had he not sinned. So the Torah begins with Gemilas Chasadim and ends with Gemilas Chasadim. So that is the real idea that, therefore, when we're talking about loving your neighbor like yourself, Ahavta L'Reacha Kamocha, that's why I put out in point number one, our acts should in no way be tied to expectations of gaining anything in return from the other person. And that's real gemilus chasadim over there. So it's interesting. There's a medrash that says before the world was created, there was a debate amongst the ministering angels if man should be created. And in one version of the medrash, it says kindness said to God that he should be created because mankind will be full of chesed. And MS and truth said to Hashem, don't create him, he's going to be full of lots. So now, the question, and Hashem said, oh, I don't care, I'm going to create him anyway. But the question is mankind completely full of chesed? Would you say that mankind is completely full of chesed? And moreover, and the criticism of mankind being completely a liar, how does that take away from the fact if mankind is completely chesed? So the answer to that is, if you really think about it, as much as we may think the world is not full of chesed, the answer is, really, it is full of lots and lots of chesed. Why? Well, let's think about it. You're having a coffee over there. The fact that you're having a coffee over there is because you are the recipient of a tremendous amount of chesed. Yeah? Tremendous amount of chesed. Now, how did you get that coffee? So there's no wrong answer to this question. You don't have to. You can be truthful. You don't have to worry. What?
I made it.
You made it, yeah? Tell me how you made it. Tell me what you did exactly.
Boiled the water. It's a tea, actually.
Oh, it's a tea. It's a tea.
I put in the tea bag.
So you made the water?
No.
No. Where did the water come from?
The tap.
The tap. Okay, how did the water get to the tap? I think there are hundreds of civil workers that are in the Department of Sewage and Water that, because that water probably, I don't know, a few weeks ago was toilet water, right? With all kinds of junk in it. That's the water you're drinking. But it's gone through a number of water treatment facilities that there are people who have to work in those places and, you know, have to plug their nose at face. I don't know what's going on over there. And there's investing lots of time and effort to make sure that that water is clean. As a matter of fact, Toronto has one of the cleanest waters around. You should know. You could drink the tap water in Toronto. It's bechlal, not a problem. I have that under authority of people who have worked in that. So all the plumbing and everything that got to your house, there's hundreds of people involved in that. Now, where did the tea bag come from?
No frills.
Okay, so no frills, just made up tea? Well, that tea comes from some tea leaves that were growing on some farm that farmers were happy to farm and put them into boxes, and then it got on a truck and a truck driver drove it. Do you know how much chesed it had to happen for you to just simply just pull that tea out and just make tea? What if people said, I'm not interested in making tea? Let Hindi go and grow a tea plant in the back of her yard. Now, are you a good farmer? Like, well, I'm not. So, you know, you'd never be able to make a tea bag. Never. You'd never be able to produce healthy hot water. Oh, the water was cold or hot? The water.
Cold from the tap, hot from the tap.
How would that make it hot? How was it hot?
The electricity.
Electricity. So the electric company is working hard to make sure you have electricity over there. Right? I mean, anything, you know, you're all going to prepare for Shabbos. You're going to prepare for Shabbos. You're going to buy chicken. You're going to buy fruits and vegetables. Now go bake it on your own. Go shech the chicken on your own, you know, and pluck the feathers on your own. And all you do is you go to the store, it's prepackaged, ready to go. So if you think about it, how about the clothes you're wearing? Are any of you good seamstresses? I would imagine what everybody's clothing would look if we'd have to make our own clothing. Right? And how much time that would take. So, and by the way, if you would have to make your own clothing and plant your own crops, you wouldn't be sitting at a class today. You wouldn't have no spare time for that. So the world is filled with a tremendous amount of chesed, isn't it? So the Medrash, what's going on over here? This is a very sensitive thing. If you don't touch it often, it says goodbye. I'm not interested. Okay. So, just 1 second. Okay, back in business. So what do you see? You see that there's a tremendous amount of chesed goes on in the world. So the Medrash was correct that there is a lot of chesed throughout your day. You know, professionals are fixing your house, making your clothes, preparing your food. So there is a tremendous amount of chesed. However, the sheker tells you, yeah, but when people are doing all that chesed, are they doing the chesed for your benefit or for their benefit? Right? And if they're really doing it for your benefit, why are they charging you so much? Right? Or let's say the analogy to someone who sells shoes. Let's say somebody makes shoes, a shoemaker. we could interview two different shoemakers. We could interview one shoemaker who says, why do you make shoes? The guy says, you know, I really would feel terrible if people would be walking around in bare feet in Toronto in the cold. And they could get blisters and cut themselves and this and that. And I really feel bad. And God enabled me to know how to make shoes. I'm making shoes so all these people can walk nicely around. It takes me a lot of time to make shoes, so I think it's not unreasonable to ask for a little bit of money so that I'll be able to buy food and have some clothing and some shelter so that I'll be able to continue to give people shoes. And I'm going to make really good shoes. The shoes that I make will last them for 25 years. Okay. You know, you're not going to get rich doing that. That's okay. I really want people to be able to be clothed well. And that's my main intention because God does it too. So I want to do it too. But I can't do it for nothing. I wish I could do it for nothing. So I have to get something. We interview the other guy says, man, it's a great business, the shoe business, man. You make shoes that they kind of break after 6 months. And you charge a lot of money, and I'm making shoes so I can make a lot of money. I just found out something that people need, and it's a great winner for me to make money. So one is full of sheker, and one is full of chesed. Right? So therefore, that analogy, so we have to ask ourselves that when we do a chesed, why are we doing it? That becomes the real question. You know, do we do chesed because we like to do chesed? Do we do chesed when we think the person... So the great test to this is, will you do chesed to people that otherwise you would not want to do chesed for? Right? The 13 attributes of mercy, we say Hashem, Hashem. Those are the first two attributes of mercy. Those are attributes of mercy after we sin. So what's the attribute of mercy? It's the same name, Hashem, Hashem. And the answer is, I am Hashem before the person sinned. I am Hashem after the person sinned. What does that mean? Well, very good. Before a person sins, Hashem loves to do chesed, loves to take care of you, and cares a lot about you and all that. What about after we sin? Hashem's, I'm the same Hashem. The same Hashem that put Adam in Gan Eden and did that chesed to put Adam in Gan Eden, the fact that Adam then sinned did not change Hashem's feelings towards Adam one iota, and now that he needs clothing... Pretty stupid. If you wouldn't have sinned, you wouldn't need clothing. I wouldn't have to bother making the clothing. Hashem says, listen, I'm here to do chesed, and you need the clothing, you need the clothing. So that is really one other point that we have to mention over here, and that's why we say points 4, 5, and 6. Hashem created the world with selfless love, which we are commanded to emulate. True love is the ability to give purely for the sake of benefiting the other person, not geared toward bringing pleasure to ourselves. And therefore, we should be willing to relinquish our comfort and pleasure so that the object of our love will benefit. So this is the difference between Jewish chesed and non-Jewish chesed. Again, as we mentioned last week at length, and I think there was a little discussion on it, if I'm not mistaken, that Hashem expects a lot more when a Jew does something than when a non-Jew does it, because we're in the Tzelem and the Dmus Elokim. We are totally the image of Hashem, in and out, while a non-Jew is not. So they can superficially do godly acts, but a Jew has to innately do godly acts, and this is a good example. Now, how many people would do chesed for people who, you know, I've been kind to you, and you've, with the kindness, you've messed things up, and now you still need more kindness? How many of us would do that? Right? So when your little baby poos all over themselves, well, of course you have kindness because she's only 6 months old. She wasn't malicious. But what happens when your adult teenagers, so to speak, poo all over themselves? You know, in other ways. Right? You know, they're drinking and driving and getting in an accident. Or whatever, you know. Or you have a teenage child who, if he's a boy especially, he has a license when he's 18, really great driver, right? And you're already paying like $1,200 a year for his insurance, and you tell him to drive carefully, and right away he gets into an accident. And then the next day he wants the car. Okay, I'm not telling you what to do, you know, but whatever decision you make should be made irregardless of the fact he got in the accident. Okay, even though it's his fault and all that, I'm not saying you should give him the keys right away, but you shouldn't not give him the keys because you're upset at him that he didn't take your kindness in the way that you gave it to him. That's the only point I'm making. So that's that makes it not so simple. But that's part of loving your neighbor like yourself, right? Because that is the ultimate kind of kindness that's there. So now that we gave enough of these parameters, it's a lot to think about in terms of kindness. And there's a lot to learn if you focus on the Avraham Avinu's life this week and next week. You'll see incredible aspects of kindness that is truly Gomel Chesed. Just one, I'll just give you one. You figure Lot in this week's Parsha. What happens? Lot is taken into captivity during World War II when the four kings fight the five kings. Lot, who's living in stone, he's taken captive. Now, if you're Avraham and you hear word from the battle that your nephew's being taken captive, what would you be thinking? Well, you'd be thinking the chapter before where Avraham and Lot's shepherds were having a fight. Why were they having a fight? Because Lot was just downright, and his shepherds were greedy. There wasn't enough pasture land, and Lot's shepherds were going into other people's properties and stealing, having their animals graze in other people's properties, which is already a massive chilul Hashem that a relative of Avraham, who's a man of God, is stealing from other people. And Avraham says, you know, we have to deal with this. And by the way, how did Lot get rich to begin with? Only because he hung around Avraham and went with him. And because Avraham got rich, Lot got rich. So really, Lot owed all his wealth to Avraham. And now with this wealth, he's creating all kinds of internal problems between Lot and Avraham. And Avraham goes out of his way and says, okay, I see we have a problem. Listen, Lot, I'll tell you what. You pick the nicest spot you want in the pasture, and I'll go somewhere else. That's a pretty good offer. But he tells him, but it's not a good idea to go to stone. Wherever you're going to go, don't go to stone. It's not a good place. So what does Lot do? He tricks Avraham and he says, okay, I'll go somewhere else. He goes the opposite direction. When he's far enough away, then he ends up going to stone. And now he ends up going to stone. Now when stone gets captured, he gets in all this trouble. And now he's been captured by the four kings. Avraham hears about this. If you were Avraham, what would you say? I told him not to go to stone. And he went to go to stone. And now he's captured by the most mighty army in the world. Four of the most mighty armies in the world. The Axis of Evil. You know, let's say Lahavdil, if you take Germany, China, and Italy. Well, Italy, anyway. You take Germany and China, is a formidable foe. And he went against much more difficult foes, and he risked his life to save him. Now, is that Chesed or Gemilus Chesed? So you see that Avraham was Gomel Chesed. So that shows you what chesed we are capable of doing. And the Yetzer Hara will always give us all kinds of reasons not to do chesed. Okay, that being said, we finished the hashkafa view of these mitzvos. But keeping in mind at all times, when we're doing this, we're trying, the goal is not, oh, I feel so sorry for them, I'm going to help them. The goal is not, I feel so sorry for them, and you know, I'll help them now, and if I'm ever in trouble, they're going to help me too. No, we have one simple goal. I want to emulate the Creator. And I emulate the Creator by loving other people and doing things for other people. That is the goal. If you don't end up emulating the Creator, then you have not accomplished the goal of what the mitzvah is about. So it's always good to keep that in mind, that there's a mitzvah aspect to what you're doing. It makes it much more, makes it loftier than just a mundane activity. So now with that, let's go through some of the practical halacha of loving your fellow as yourself and walking in Hashem's ways. Okay, good? Clear? Okay. So point D, section D. Your life, physical, and spiritual needs come first. Okay? As much as a great mitzvah to help other people, it says in a Sefer Vayikra, V'chei achicha imach, let him live by your side as your kinsman. Imach with you means, but first you have to be able to live. And your life takes precedence over your friend's life. The famous example in the Gemara, if you and your friend are in the desert and you have a lot of water and your friend doesn't, and your friend says, share the water with me, and the situation would be such that if you share the water with him, you both die. If you give him your water, he lives and you die. Or if you keep the water, you live and he dies. Rabbi Akiva says, your life takes precedence. even if we're going to die right in front of you. You have a responsibility. The first chesed you have to have is to yourself. You love your neighbor like yourself. Well, if you don't love yourself, how can you love your neighbor? And you have an obligation to take care of yourself first. Even that means you can't help other people. Because you can't say, well, I'll be selfless. No, you can't. Because Hashem says you have to take care of yourself first. You don't own yourself. You know that? Hashem owns you. And Hashem says, you're the most responsible person. I make you responsible to take care of yourself. Now that you're taking care of yourself, now, it doesn't mean to say you can't inconvenience yourself. Look what I said in point six. We should be willing to relinquish our comfort and pleasure so that the object of our love will benefit. But not to risk things that could be harmful to you. Comfort is one thing. Having a little less sleep is one thing. Sleep deprived is another. If you like to get 8 hours of sleep and the chesed will mean tonight you get 7.5 hours, no. But if the chesed means you're going to get 4 hours of sleep for the next week and then you're going to get yourself a strep throat and a flu and all that, well, sorry, that's not a mitzvah. You've done an avera because you didn't take care of yourself. So that becomes a very tricky thing. And that applies not just for your life, but in source three, your personal livelihood takes precedence over someone else's livelihood, which we'll give examples of that in a minute. We're not obligated to give tzedakah to support others unless we have enough money for our own basic needs. You can't say, well, I'm going to give tzedakah, and because of that, I won't have what I need. Now, you could give tzedakah that you won't have luxuries. I'm going to give tzedakah, and I'm not going to be able to go on vacation this year. Okay, you could do that. Now, if you gave 10%, you don't have to. But if you want that, you can do. But if you're going to deprive yourself of basic needs, you're not allowed to do that either. We're not required to help others if this will lead to damage to ourselves. So here's an example we gave. Let's say you have a job, and you get paid by the hour. And if you take off of work, you lose money. But I'm helping the other person. You're not obliged to lose money to help the other person. Now, again, everything depends. Depends how much money you're losing. Is it a minimal loss? Is it a substantial loss? But that you're not obliged. If you're at work and taking off of work would create a great hardship for you, then not necessarily. Again, all these would have to be done with good counsel with someone else to know at what point is it discomfort and what point is it harmful. So you can't just give a standard answer. You'd have to really figure this out. Point five, we're not expected to invest time and effort to do work for another individual instead of taking care of the same matter for ourselves. You wanna cut the grass. Well, I don't know, do people still cut the grass? But in our house, we still cut the grass. Most people hire someone else. But whatever example. So the neighbor says, oh, can you cut my grass, please? Well, if I cut your grass, I can't cut my grass. I only have 20 minutes, so I can. So sorry, I have to cut my grass. Oh, you're being so selfish. No, I'm not being selfish. I need to cut my grass. If I had extra time, yeah, then maybe I would. But if you don't, you're not obliged to do that. Something you wouldn't, if you don't have the time, you can only do it for yourself. You can't do it for someone else. Someone says, can you go do my whole shopping? And we know how long shopping takes, right? Well, for me. Well, if I do that for you, I won't have time to go shopping for myself. So that'd be no. Well, how about when you're going shopping, you pick up 3 or 4 things for me? Well, that's a wholly different story. Because, okay, so it'll take you another 3 minutes to go and get 4 items of someone else. You probably have that kind of time. Now, if you have a lot of spare time and you have time to go shopping for yourself and to go shopping for somebody else, then you should go shopping for somebody else if you got all that free time. So it depends a lot on what your situation is. Here's an interesting one. Number six, in a case where we would not have done that act for ourselves at all, now someone asks us to do a similar thing, and we certainly would not be obliged to do the same act for others. So let's say you're a very honorable person and it's not dignified for you to carry your luggage. That's the example the Talmud gives. Like, it's beneath your... You wouldn't do such a thing. Let's say, I'll give you a better example. Some women will not clean a toilet. Right? Some? Maybe you don't know any of them. But there are some ladies, prima donnas, whatever, They don't even know what a toilet looks like. I mean, what I'm just saying, they're not going to clean a toilet. They just don't clean toilets. Now, this woman comes and visits someone's house, and the person's sick. So, is there anything I can do for you? Yeah, the toilet needs to be cleaned. Now, if you don't clean toilets because it grosses you out, I wouldn't clean a toilet, so you don't have to clean their toilet. You know, or other examples. Let's say you would never drive a carpool. I could hear how some people would never want to drive one. I've driven a carpool. But it could be somebody, my husband does the carpool. Let's just say. Or my wife does the carpool. Right? Do you have any families like that? You know? But I just can't. They make me crazy. I'll go out of my mind. I just don't do carpools. Well, can you do the carpool for me? No, I just don't do carpools, period. I don't do it for myself, and I'm not going to do it for you either. That's allowed. That's allowed, because Hashem can't ask you to do more than what you don't do for yourself. Now, if you did, now you'd really be, but that you'd be off the charts, tzaddik. And you're not obliged to be that far, right? Only what you would do for yourself. If you wouldn't do that for yourself, you're not obliged to do that. One exception, number 7, a husband has to do more for his wife than he'd do for himself. A husband. This one, I'm sure you remember to tell your husband. What did the rabbi teach you? Oh, this one. This one is a quote of the Gemara. A husband should love his wife exactly as he loves himself and honor her even more than he, not donors, honors, typo, bad typo over there, more than he honors himself. A man is obligated to exert himself for his wife's sake, even in acts that he would not perform for his own needs. So even if he doesn't do the toilets, if she asks him to do the toilets, he has to do the toilets, or at least pay a nanny to do it, whatever. But you have to do even these ones, because ishto kagufo, your wife is just an extension of yourself. She's not a different person, not a different person. She is you, and whatever she needs, you need. Even though you wouldn't do it, but if she would do it, you would do it. And that becomes the exception. Interesting, the wife doesn't have to do that for the husband. Go discuss that. That's another Parsha class for another time. But so that becomes the exception. Now, let's say, yes, ma'am. Now, obviously, a lot of these will have to have personal shilas because everyone's life is different. But you could see how this becomes no different than the laws of milk and meat that get mixed together. That needs a lot of guidance. Yeah, I'm sorry.
You've outlined very clearly how we try to emulate Hashem. And Hashem doesn't say, okay, I don't do these things. I don't do toilets. I don't do these, whatever it is. We're trying to emulate Hashem. So the person who says, yeah, I don't do toilets.
Well, only to a point. Because remember, Hashem, see, the analogy will fall short under certain circumstances because there's nothing that Hashem can't do. For Hashem to do a toilet isn't the same thing than for you to do a toilet. Right? There's nothing that Hashem can't do. So,
but I guess what I'm struggling with is to say I don't do that.
No, because I don't even do it for myself.
Okay, but why don't you do it for yourself?
Because I don't. It grosses me out. It's disgusting. I get all heebie-jeebie. I get panic attacks. I don't. You know. Let's another example. Let's say people have fear of flying. I don't fly. Guy says, "Do me a favor. I need you to fly to a place and get this done for me." I'm sorry, I don't fly. Even for myself, I wouldn't do it. Whatever it is, if you have psychological problems, if you have emotional problems, if you're a delicate person, I just don't do it for myself. I can't. I can't do it. So Hashem can't ask you to do something. If you're not doing anything you want to do for yourself, you should do it for others. Wouldn't you want someone to forgive you if you did something wrong? Everybody would want that. He said, no, I don't want people to be kind to me when I'm bad to them. No, everybody wants that. Right? Everyone says, you know, even if I did something wrong, won't you have mercy on me? Everybody wants that. Right? So we should do it to other people, do it to us. Because that's something we would do, we would want. But something that I just can't do it. I don't do it even for myself. Under no circumstances would I do it for myself. So I just can't do it. Hashem can't ask you to do what you can't do. And the biggest proof is you don't do it for yourself. You don't do it for yourself. But But other things, all the other things you should do because, you know, give a person another chance. Everybody wants another chance. But people say, no, I don't ever want another chance. Now, again, a person can't, these can't be things that are dangerous. You know, you can't say, well, if I was sick, I wouldn't go to the doctor. Well, no, you have to help someone go to the doctor because then you're just stomp nuts. Okay, you're just stomp wrong. We can't say a person's wrong for not cleaning a toilet. You're not going against halacha, but I don't do it for myself. I don't have to do it for others. Yeah, you want to be a bigger beyond? Okay, but we're talking about the mitzvah. Now there's higher levels. You know, you can only legislate so much. Right? And if, you know, the person would, you know, have trauma by doing that. If they don't do it for themselves. I mean, like very wealthy people, I mean like really wealthy people, they have a lot of handicaps in life because they can't do normal things that everybody else can do. Like, you don't realize, like for them to like clean the house, they would have a meltdown. They would have a meltdown. I know this crowd doesn't understand this, but there are people like that who would just have a meltdown. They have to clean the house. They have to go for psychological help for years. They have to clean a toilet. That they'd be scarred for life. So I can't do that for somebody else. It's not going to be a lot of examples of this, but if it's beneath your dignity, you know, you're an honorable person. Honorable people don't do certain things. So that's the exclusion to that. Okay, something to think about. All right, point eight. A person may not give time to another when he needs that time to fulfill his own halachic requirements. So let's say a simple example. A guy's got to go to shul. He's got to go to shul. He has to go to Marv. And Marv, let's say, the only Marv in town is at 9:45. Let's just say. And the guy calls him at 9:30 and says, you know, I need you to, can you just watch my kids for a minute? I got to go to the store for something. Right? What do you need? I need you from 9:45 to 10. And I say, sorry, I can't do that. Why? Because I have to go to davening. Well, can't you daven alone? No. Torah says I have to daven in the minyan. Why don't you ask somebody else? Ask a lady who doesn't have to go to minyan. In other words, you're not obliged because you have an expectation from Hashem that Hashem has told you have to do this. So it's not your time to give away. Just like, for example, let's say you're walking in the office and you're paid to do a job in your office. And the boss makes it clear, you know, you don't surf the internet. When you have a break, you take a break. But when you're working for me, you don't do other things. Now your friend calls you up and needs help. you know, let's say you use a certain software package in your office and your friend who works somewhere else has the same software package. And they call you while you're working for your boss. And the boss makes it clear, no outside conversations. You just stay with the job. When you have your break, you do what you want. And now the person calls you up there in a panic. Oh, my software has this problem. You know, I don't know how to make this happen. Can you help me? What's going to be the answer? I would love to help you during my break. But I need it now. I understand. But I can't do that because I'd be stealing from my boss. My boss does not. But it's chesed. Can't do chesed. You can't do chesed on someone else's cheshbon and make the boss lose out. Unless you call the boss, is it okay, can I help them now? I'll stay another 20 minutes later for work. Okay, then maybe. So that's the same thing. If you have a halachic requirement, you know, doesn't mean you can do chesed at the expense of what the halach is. It has all kinds of ramifications, which need a lot of further discussion, such as, okay, a husband has to go to shul Shabbos morning, the wife has got four little kids under 6 years old in the house, she can't handle it. She tells the husband, you're going to stay home, then you're not going to go to shul. Okay. You would need halacha guidance on how to deal with that. I'm not going to give you an answer right now. But the issues at play would be, on the one hand, is the chesed certainly starts at home. You have to have chesed to help your wife with the kids. On the other hand, the husband has a halachic requirement to go to shul. So now the question is, how devastating will it be? So I'm just giving you the guidelines. Now you'd have to go to a rav and spell out exactly your family matzav. But it's not as a dover pashut. Well, the husband doesn't go to shul if the wife needs help. That's clearly not a given. It's also clearly not a given. Well, the husband has to daven regardless of what's going on in the house. That's also not clear. But there are guidelines, and now you have to navigate it. So you have to kind of say, well, to go to the wife, well, what do you mean? He's just not going to daven? He says, well, I need help. Well, why do you need help? Well, it's kind of hard for me. Kind of hard for you? Or I'm having a mental breakdown. That's a different situation. Wouldn't you agree? There are some women who are not that strong. We'll use that kind of word. I don't know which word to say. But, you know, having four kids screaming, they can't handle it. And they're maybe not the most skillful women, or they're just, or maybe they already have a 9-to-5 job already because the husband can't make a living, and they're just totally spent, and they will suffer mental issues or physical issues. Okay, then there might be a place, or maybe say, well, listen, maybe he'll go to the Hashkama Minyan and he'll come back at 10 o'clock. But all I'm saying is, you just can't flippantly say we need a chesed, and therefore we're going to disregard your halachic requirements. The halachic requirements are halachic requirements; they can't just be poo-pooed away. However, yeah, there's always exceptions. Obviously, if your wife has to go to the emergency, you don't say, "Well, I have to daven mincha." We know that life comes before that. But when you're in the chesed realm, that's already a little bit of a iffy realm. So, in general, the default is we don't waive halachic requirements to do chesed. Now, depending on how strong the chesed, where it becomes not just regular chesed, but your mom is saving someone's mental health, that becomes an issue that needs guidance in. Okay, similarly, point 9, a person cannot put the Torah learning of others before his own Torah learning. Somebody wants you to teach him something. Well, but if I'm teaching you, I'm not able to learn anything myself. Let's say you have very little time for your own personal Torah growth. Very little time. And the person says, will you help me? Well, if I help you, I won't be able to learn any of my own Torah. Then you're not obliged to help the other person. On the other hand, point number 10, lets you have much more time. Let's say you have, for the sake of argument, you have, let's say, 10 hours of discretional time. After you've done all your work, you work at home, you work at work, you do this, and on an average basis, we'll say you have 10 hours of discretionary time. And during that time, I'd like to learn Torah, I'd like to go to a class, I'd like to luxuriate myself with something once in a while, which is all fine. But then you should give 1/10 of your spare time to, let's say, teach someone Torah. So let's say your husband, just for the sake of art, let's say your husband learns 10 hours a week. He learns 10 hours a week, all right? And then he gets a call from Partners in Torah. Will you be a chavrusa for this guy once a week for an hour? The guy says, sorry, I have 10 hours if I learn Torah. If I do that, I'll only have 9. Then the rabbis say, so you'll only have 9. Because it's no different than tzedakah. You can't say, I can't give you a tzedakah with everything. So if you have 10 hours that you're learning Torah, you should give up 1 hour and help other people. So that's kind of how we deal. But if helping a person means you're not going to really learn, they say, well, we want you to learn with 5 partners. Well, no, that much I don't have to do. I can learn with 1 partner, and I'll give 1 hour happily to teach someone Torah, do a chesed, but I still have to know my own Torah. Okay, 11, we're required to protect ourselves from poverty and financial loss. If the chesed means that I will now become impoverished because of that or suffer financial loss, I don't have to do that. The same would apply in any case where performing a mitzvah for someone else would cause us monetary loss, would cause us to neglect our job, as I already explained. And also, the Gemara says a classic example, your own lost object takes precedence over others' lost objects. If you lost something and they lost something and they want you to look for their thing first, and you say, no, I can look for my things first. However, it is meritorious to go beyond the letter of the law and not be overly particular about giving our own property priority when the loss is not a certainty but is only a possibility. One should not use the above exceptions to never do chesed. The point of this is as follows. You could take this point of I come first way beyond where you're allowed to take it. You know, yeah, if you only have 1 hour a week to learn, then you say no. But, you know, a person could get into the habit of being particular about everything. You know, I can't mow the lawn for you because I have to mow the lawn for myself. And a person can start developing a habit, well, I have to do this, 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 and I have no time for anybody else. Well, then what happens at the end of the day? You never end up doing any chesed. Well, that's not a good way to look at things either. So what we mean to say is sometimes we program our lives in a way that doesn't enable us to ever do chesed. And therefore, we have to reprioritize how we program our lives. So, you know, let's say you have a job. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you have raising kids. You have this. But now you've built in a lot of other things in your day that make it very impossible for you to do chesed with others because you've prioritized yourself to such a priority. Well, I learn Torah 2 hours a week, and I have my exercise class 2 hours a week, and I have my, I do play music, I have my music lesson 1 hour a week, and I'm really, and I've got my social obligations that I take care of 2 nights a week, and all these other things, and I'm just so busy with my life, I have no time to do chesed, and after all, I come first. Okay, there's got to get a point where you have to draw the line. That's where, because there are people who take this halacha too extreme. I say, what do you mean? It means if I do that, our weekly mahjong game is canceled. Well, yeah, I guess it is. Because you've got all these other things, you know, you got everything going on in the world. So, like, if everything, like, your life is okay, I mean, all your needs are taken care of, but, you know, is it my weekly mahjong game or my weekly visit to Beaker Home? Well, I think, you know, if you've taken care of everything else, you haven't left anything for any chesed, then you'd have to give up something, because that comes back to that line, relinquish our comfort and pleasure. People somehow define comforts and pleasures as needs. And then you have no time for anybody else. So then you have to understand. So obviously we're not telling you to not have any comfort and any pleasure, but we live in a world where people are living like where they expect to have every comfort and every pleasure, and you have to be willing to give up some comfort and pleasure if that means you're never going to be able to do chesed. Finally, on this issue, when there is a mitzvah that cannot be delegated to another, a mitzvah has to be done. Now, let me give the context. The context is, if let's say you're learning Torah. When you're learning Torah, and then you get a phone call, somebody needs a chesed. So now the question is, do you stop learning Torah and do the chesed? Or do you say, I'm learning Torah and I don't do the chesed? So the general rule of thumb is, this is part of the halachic obligation, since learning Torah is a mitzvah, and I'm doing a mitzvah when I learn Torah, so I don't have to do another mitzvah when I'm doing that mitzvah. The general default position is, if you have a Torah class, you don't miss it because someone's asking you for a chesed. You say, you know what? There's a lot of people who are not learning Torah right now. Why don't you ask one of them? Especially for men, more so than women. Men have a much bigger obligation to learn Torah than women. Because I don't want to get into why, but clearly they do. So let's say your husband, he has a chavrusa every Wednesday night for 2 hours. And now somebody calls, they need his help. And they need it on Wednesday night. Whatever, they need a ride to the airport. Place, I don't know. So the guy says, well, I'm really sorry. There's a lot of people who are not learning Wednesday night for 2 hours. Let them give you a ride to the airport. That's the general rule of thumb. Now, what if, though, there's nobody else to do it? This person needs this chesed. There's nobody else to do it. Right? Let's say a friend of your calls, says, I'm not feeling well. Can you take me to the Emerge? Well, why don't you call Hatzolah? Hatzolah says it's not that serious. You just should go to Emerge. Well, I want somebody to go with me to Emerge. Okay, let's say it's necessary. Let's say it is necessary to go to Emerge, right? So, well, I got a chavrusa now. Can you ask somebody else? You know, you have other friends. Ask the friends who aren't learning Torah to go with you to Emerge. Well, I asked a bunch and they don't want to. What, you asked Schwartz? Why didn't Schwartz go? You know, he's a lazy good for nothing. He doesn't go out of his way to do things. Even though he's not learning, he's not doing it, he still doesn't want to do it. With place. And let's say you find out that 7 or 8 of his friends are just being too lazy. They don't want to do it. But they're not doing it. And you're the guy who's learning Torah. But really, somebody should go with him. You know, it is somebody should go with him. Even though nobody else wants to go. Now, if no one's going to do it, and the mitzvah, chesed, will not be done, only then do you then say, I can cancel the Torah learning. And only to the point that your mitzvah is required. And as soon as it's finished, you go back to learning right away. So that's the general rule of thumb. So when chesed opportunities arise, so let's say you have a chesed opportunity next Wednesday at 9:30. Someone says, I don't know, can you take me out to buy a shaitel? I never bought a shaitel before. I need someone to give me guidance. and you know, I don't want to get ripped off. That would be a chesed. That is a chesed. So what time did you say? I'm in the middle of a shir. Well, that's the only time she has for me. Well, I'm sorry, you know, I know there's only 10 ladies in Thornhill, or I don't know, I'm being presumptuous, that are learning Torah at 9:30, which is for the sake of argument. And I know I have lots of friends who don't learn Torah in the morning. Why don't you try A, B, C, D, and E and ask them if they'll take you? You know, and that's the response you should give, because you're learning Torah and they're not. Now, if she calls, you know, I called 12 people and they're all saying no, you know, well, can't you make no? So that, then there might be room to not go to the Torah class, because you're the only one who could do it. I'm just giving a type of example. All right. Good. Yeah. Moving on. Relatives and others who take precedence. Same rule. Relatives take precedence over others in all mitzvahs of chesed. So, obviously, generally we're obligated to care for our parents' needs before tending the needs of our children, and our children's needs before those of our siblings, and so on. There's a higher, just like there's a hierarchy of tzedakah, there's a hierarchy of chesed, and you have to follow that hierarchy. So, you know, depending on how close, the closer the family is, the more you have to do that. So if your parents, you have elderly parents and they need help, now, you know, they're going to take priority over your kids. Somebody else will have to take care of your kids or whatever, and your kids come before your siblings, etc. There's a hierarchy on that. And certainly chesed within your family comes before chesed outside the family, okay? And the chesed of our community takes precedence over the chesed of another community. Just like in the laws of tzedakah, the same thing as chesed, where you just can't do the chesed you want to do. There is rules of who gets chesed first. Could be you don't really like your sister, for example. You really don't like her, and it's a pain in the neck to go with her and help her with these things. And you got some good friends who need help, and they both need help, and you can only say yes to one of them. You have to say yes to your sister, even though you'd rather be with your friends. That's what the halacha is saying. Okay, to whom and how do these mitzvahs apply? We're obligated to love and do chesed for all Jews, poor and rich. That should be men and women. Children, people of unsound mind, and even people who are no longer alive. So therefore, let's talk about people who are mentally compromised. That's a nice way of saying it. No? Or very physically compromised, where they don't even know what you're doing for them. Okay, that's still chesed. Even though, the person is not of sound mind. They don't know what's the difference. You know, it's not going to make a difference. No, it's still a mitzvah of chesed. People who are no longer alive need chesed. Let's say if a cemetery has been vandalized, whatever, and you have to fix up the cemetery, those kinds of things, chesed applies to them. And acts of kindness to people no longer alive are particularly valuable because you know you're not going to get any payback from them. Included in this mitzvah is offering free lending arrangements of utensils, books, money, and any other services that are needed. Somebody wants to borrow something from you, unless you actually need it, why shouldn't you lend it to them? Although you're afraid they may break it. So, I lent something 5 years ago and they broke it. They never ended up paying for it. So I have a policy. I don't lend anymore. Not a good policy to have. And you know, that you'd be surprised how many people just don't do the simplest chesed because they don't want people touching their stuff. You know, I'd rather buy them a new one than let them use mine. That totally is not appropriate. Including this mitzvah is giving good advice and counsel to others. If someone says, I need your advice, you should know, say, I'm prepared to do the mitzvah of chesed. You have to, again, I'm emphasizing this. A lot of times we do mitzvahs when we don't know we're doing mitzvahs. You should be cognizant that you're doing a mitzvah. And because when you're doing a mitzvah, it comes with a whole new feeling and a whole new connection to Hashem that comes from that. Your friend says, I got this problem. Do you have a few minutes? So before you say yes, say in your mind, I'm now prepared to do the mitzvah of Gemilas Chesed and Emilim Mekredit. Yes, what did you say? And now you're doing it as a mitzvah, not just as a being nice. Generally speaking, there's always exceptions. There is no mitzvah to love non-Jews. We respect, we give them courtesy, we treat them as decent human beings, we say please and thank you, and all those things with all the proper manners. But no mitzvah to love non-Jews. It's not an avera to love non-Jews, but it's certainly not a mitzvah. So leave it up to you. Like, for example, maybe you were raised with a non-Jewish nanny for 20 years and she took care of you. We can't say, well, you're not allowed to love them. You're a sinner if you love them. Listen, like, she did so much for me. I love her. Okay, fine. You love her. It's not an avera. But you're not obliged to love a non-Jew because they don't share the same root soul with you. And also those who we've discussed are categorized as extreme sinners, like the guy who doesn't give a get to his wife or whatever. Extreme, extreme sinners. No mitzvah to love them. Because these are people, you don't love people that Hashem doesn't love. Okay? And we don't love people that infuriate Hashem. Right? Must be especially careful regarding loving converts, widows, and orphans, where the Torah goes out of its way multiple times to say we have to love them. And that would also apply to a stranger to his surroundings. A new person comes into the neighborhood, we have to love them more than everybody else. And to conclude, these mitzvahs, these two mitzvahs that we started off with, loving your fellow yourself and walking Hashem's ways, are closely related to almost every mitzvah between man and his fellow man. In other words, as you do almost any mitzvah, it almost always is based on loving your neighbor like yourself and walking in the ways of Hashem. So if you perform these mitzvahs, you're probably performing the mitzvah of Derecha Kamocha as well. If you violate them, you're probably violating that mitzvah as well. And this comes out in the Rambam very nicely, and we'll end with this. The Rambam writes, it's a positive mitzvah to visit the sick, comfort the mourners, escort the dead, dower the bride, accompany the departing guests, as well as to cheer the bride and the groom and assist them in whatever they need. These are acts of chesed that one personally exerts oneself to perform, and we have no set maximum measure. Even though all these precepts are of rabbinic origin, all those are rabbinic. Nowhere in the Torah does it say you have to visit the sick. It doesn't say black and white, visit the sick. It's the rabbi said, this is what you do. However, they are implied in the biblical verse, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. That is, whatever you would have others do to you, do to your brothers in Torah and precepts. So therefore, we're saying that many of the good things we do, it all comes back to be part of that mitzvah. So what we're going to do next week is we're going to focus on a few particular mitzvahs. That although it is chesed, or loving your neighbor like yourself, but they have much more complexity to them, and we have to understand how they work. And we will start with visiting the sick. Because there are halachas of visiting the sick. And there's a way to do it the way you're supposed to do it, and there's ways not to do it. And we'll pick a number of those miniature topics for next week, God willing. Okay, perfect. We got that done exactly.